Hey, welcome back to Skin in the Game. I'm your host, John Simperman, with my co-host, Tim O'Shea. And we're actually here celebrating in person, in studio, episode number 50. Tim, episode 50.
Did you think we would make it this far?
I hope so.
I thought so. I'm, you know, it's cool to be celebrating 50, both on camera, right? Because we're shifting this program. For those of you watching this, you can now watch it or listen to it along with hearing it on the radio. But really excited for our guest today. And so, guys, I couldn't be happier to have you here, and especially for the 50th episode of Skin in the Game. So Scott Radisek and Jonathan Malley from Populous, one of the world's leading architectural design firms. Listeners from the Buffalo-Toronto area will know your work on the Buffalo Bills Stadium that opens next year. But Jonathan and Scott do work all around the world. And so, John, happy to introduce you to Jonathan and Scott.
Guys, thanks for joining us. I have experienced your work firsthand, and we're going to talk about a few of the great venues and really some super exciting projects on the horizon. So look forward to chatting about that and getting our listeners to know a little bit more about Populous and your vision.
Let's start here, though. So, Scott, you spent 12 years playing in the National Football League.
I did.
And I remember reading an article way back when about how, you know, Scott Radisek is more than a linebacker. He's an architectural engineer. And you know, I'm going to let you tell the story from here. But sure, you transitioned out of the National Football League and into the design business, ultimately co-founded the firm Populous.
Right.
So tell us that story. And then, Jonathan, I'm going to ask you for your backstory soon, too, here.
Oh, good.
We'll try to do it as quickly as we can, right? So I was an architectural engineer at Penn State, and I loved the fact that I could do that and still play the best football ever in the country. We won a national championship and had a legendary coach, but I never was quite sure exactly what do I do with this architectural engineering degree. And then I got into my seventh year, so I played my first 3 years with the Chiefs, then came to Buffalo, three more years, and went to Indianapolis. It was in that first year in Indianapolis that I started to reach out to my professor and different folks. And I talked to builders and I talked to construction managers and architects, and seemed like that was a good fit. And of course, I came across Ron Lubinsky, Jack Stedman, who was the president of the Chiefs back when I played there. He gave me Ron's contact information. He had told me about him. I contacted him. He said, come in for an interview. And to make a long story short, he said, I want you to play in the NFL as long as you want, but just give me your off seasons and I'll teach you a little bit about this business. And so I played five more years. So I worked five off seasons. So while I'm playing in the NFL in my off seasons, I'm going back to Kansas City and working. We have two young kids at the time. And that's what Ron did, right? He threw me into things. And he's not like he sat there and taught me how to do everything, but he threw me into situations and he had me around people that knew the business and they knew design and they knew the technical proficiency that you have to be successful. And he taught me a little bit about programming buildings. And so when the career ended, right, I go back and start full time. And now that whole timeline, I'm in my 34th year. And yeah, I'm one of the global directors with Jonathan of the company. There's 14 of us, I believe. I've just tried to keep myself around the things I love, yeah, right? College yeah. athletics, the NFL, athlete training, playing football, football stadiums, and things have spread out from there. But it's a privilege to be here. It's great to be back in Buffalo. We spent a lot of time here over the last 15 years doing various work at the stadium and at Harbor Center and now the new building, and very excited for the future for Buffalo football fans.
Jonathan, how about your background? How did you get into the sports architecture world?
Sports didn't come right away. So instead of playing on the field, I think I was playing with Legos, you know, probably from age, whatever, 3 or 5. And it just sort of never stopped, right? I think by the time I was 12 or 14, I was already like, I'm going to be an architect. Maybe there was a stint where I was like, maybe I'll be a movie director or something like that. But I stuck with architecture, went right into undergrad at the University of Florida, went then to Columbia University for graduate school, started with another firm in New York that I was with for about 16 years. And that really created the foundation for the type of work I got into. First and foremost, I'm a designer. I'm also an architect, and we pride ourselves on being business people as well. But the first sports and entertainment experience that I had was the Barclays Center. And so doing that with the prior firm, had this opportunity to see what it was like to have 15,000 people come up from you know, a train station and come into one entrance of a building and what that was like. The venue opened to 8 Jay-Z concerts.
Oh, and that's, there was some breakthrough technology and breakthrough, what I would call fan experience areas in that building.
It's starting with the exterior and the way that the canopy came out and greeted people in this LED experience when you walked in. I went to all 8 shows, 8 of the Jay-Z shows. And I think it was at that moment that I, in that period of time, not only working on the design and the delivery, but then going to the opening and seeing people experience architecture and events at the same time, that I think that's when I went from, it's more than just designing and laying something out. Mm-hmm. It's about experience. Mm-hmm. And that's what the firm was founded on, Populous. And that's what I'm like overjoyed to this day, being involved in those kinds of projects.
Yeah.
So many projects along the way that both of us have worked on together and separately and in the country and in New York and around the world. But, you know, I think it started at that kind of moment.
Yeah. I guess this is for Scott. I remember, because I'm always trying to figure out why was Kansas City this hotbed of sports architecture, right? So, and just, and I guess for our listeners as well as myself, is Populous, was that a kind of an evolution of HOK? Just kind of give us the origins of that.
Sure. I wouldn't say it was an evolution of HOK, but it's definitely been a journey and an evolution for our firm. So there were a group of people, notably a gentleman named Ron Lubinsky, who I just mentioned, who went to work on that project. So if you remember back in the 60s, the Dallas Texans moved to Kansas City. And they had the Kansas City Athletics, the baseball team, and they were now sharing the municipal stadium. And Charlie Finley was trying to get a new deal done to keep his team in Kansas City. And he couldn't get a deal that he felt was a good business decision. So he moved the team to Oakland.
Mm-hmm.
And so the people who were the leaders of Kansas City determined that we're going to build a new sports complex, and we're not going to do what a lot of other cities were doing, is build these multi-purpose donuts like they did in Cincinnati and Pittsburgh and Philly and other places, were going to create 2 bespoke stadiums, and that way we won't lose a team in the future. And so they hired a very well-known architect, Charles Deaton, to design that building, but there was a local firm called DGL and Design, James Lubinsky Myers, and Lubinsky was one of those gentlemen, and so he worked on that stadium. And he kind of got the bug, so he ended up meeting Ralph, and he consulted on the Bills Stadium. He met Mara. He consulted on Giants Stadium. He and others left that firm. And funny story, they were going after the Hoosier Dome back in 1980. And that committee on making that decision on that stadium said they were too small. They loved Ron's ideas, but they weren't going to hire them, and they were going to hire another big, large firm. But they told that big, large firm that they needed to hire Lubinsky if they're going to get the job. So to make a long story short, he moves over there. He takes a couple other guys with him. And in 1983, as that building's opening, they start their own firm, and it's called HOK Sport. So they went to HOK. They said, we want to present something to you. We want to do sport architecture, and we'll be a Kansas City office for you, but all we're going to do is sports. And that was the deal. And that was 1983. As that evolved and they had more success, early projects, Camden Yards, Jacobs Field, and other great projects, we grew and we ended up adding other services. We got Jerry Anderson come in to do event planning. We got Todd Voth to come in and start a convention center practice. And these things keep rolling along until we do some common work with an international firm called Lobb that was working all over the UK and Australia. They designed Stadium Australia. We actually were hired to review their design because the IOC wanted to make sure that this small firm, Lobb, made sure that it complied with international standards. And all that stuff continued to kind of move through its timing until 2009, when there were 13 of us, that we evolved into a move away from HOK. That's when we became Populous. Shortly after that, Jonathan joined us, and we've been kind of expanding that brand and how we impact fan experience all over the world ever since. So it has been an evolution. It's taken, I know I've been working on the story of the firm, and it's, as Jonathan will tell you, I mean, the idea was never to be the biggest. The idea was to have fun, number one, have fun, and create really unique, beautiful places and make them financially sustainable for everybody who goes to them. And once we did that for one person, another one wanted it, and then another one wanted it. And next thing you know, you're doing more and more, and you look around and all of a sudden you got 1,600 people, right? Like, it's crazy. You know,
it's a common theme of late. We're in this state of a very kind of calm evolution. The firm is always evolving. We're always thinking about what's next. And I think if you're not thinking that way, you stagnate. And then you don't attract the youngest talent, the best talent, and you're not out doing the next thing. So evolution is a pretty top of mind word for us right now.
Yeah, especially with how technology is evolving, fan expectations are significant.
Through the roof.
Right? Through the roof, competition from other media sources. We talk a lot about that on Skin of the
Game. Oh, for sure. I mean, I see it just in the array of talented people that you both have on the staff at Populous. I mean, amongst those 1,600 people, I'm thinking through those who have met covering the Bills Stadium development for the Buffalo News. We're talking interior designers, architects, and with this broad array of specialties. I mean, Scott, we were just, you know, we're an hour, you know, removed from being on the roof of the Buffalo Bills Stadium.
Right.
But hopefully our hair is, hopefully we'll fixed our hair from the hard hat. But I mean, you've got people who specialize on the roof and the exterior of the stadium and what the heck to do with the wind, you know, whatever the terminology is for that. Right. So,
yeah. I mean, if you think about it, single family residential homes, you might have an architect, you might have two or three. The team of people, not just within Populous, but all the consultants, all of the design team, and then, of course, the workforce that's out there actually building it, it's hundreds, if not thousands, of people. So you really, you know, you start to need a team that could be 30, 40, 50 people at times. And there are specialists. They work on the exterior wall or interior design or branding and sponsorship activation, you know, and we're branching into audiovisual consultancy now and all of these other services that kind of broaden the offering because that's what our clients are looking for. And these large complex structures, they take an enormous effort to orchestrate.
What's the time frame on, you know, on that evolution in sports structures? I mean, we're going back to, you know, Scott, what you call the donut stadiums, which I assume would be like Three Rivers Stadium or Riverfront Stadium in Pittsburgh, Cincinnati.
The 60s and 70s.
So that's the simple times, right, of design. And but now, I mean, we look at, I mean, the Buffalo Bills Stadium, for example, it's expensive, but it's not the most expensive development out there. Something like SoFi is, you know, four or five times the cost. Even at that price level, it is an incredibly complex undertaking.
I mean, if you go back into the 80s or even before then, a lot of these buildings, they were, you know, technological masterpieces of, you know, real expertise that goes into figuring out sight lines. And that's what the firm was really founded on, was the technical proficiency it required to do this kind of project. That being said, a lot of these buildings were kind of stadium in the parking lot periods of time. And what we're seeing now, and especially over the last 8 to 5 years, is these venue-anchored mixed-use districts that are developing around the stadiums. And so that's something that all of our clients are looking at in different levels or in different ways. Some of them are more interested in it, some are a little bit less. But when you can create a 365-day-a-year environment and activate it, so it's not just the game day, right? It's just not the NFL game. It's more. We're consistently in an experience economy, right? All of the fans out there, the spectators, concerts, all of that, they want to be entertained.
Yeah. It's really fascinating when bias is the American perspective of stadiums. But even when you start to look overseas, and you'll see that, you know, in the UK, as an example, you know, the early stadiums were built on mounds of slag that came out of the mills or when they were digging the tubes, and they just stood on these things. And then they built these balconies where they could stand together. And these stadiums were started just from the backbone, right? And they lived and breathed that community. And then over time, they became a little bit more significant until they had a couple of significant accidents, right? Where lots of fans died. And then there was an inquiry into that, which then started, you know, set up a whole new standard for how stadiums would get designed, where everybody had to be in a seat. And at the same time, that's happening here in the U.S., coinciding with television, right? Now, all of a sudden, you can watch a sporting event on the television instead of going, and stadiums weren't that comfortable, and there wasn't a lot of amenity. And all of a sudden, it just hit this place where they began to be a little more privatized. And that was an opportunity for a lot of the original founders of the company 40, 43, 44 years ago was, we want to do this and we want to make it better than it's ever been. And we want to just keep doing it. And even we talk a lot as a leadership group that we just want to keep doing the things we love to do. And those projects get more expensive and they get more complicated. And then you want to do a lot of them at the same time. And it's one of the things that kind of, I guess it was a catalyst for some of the growth that we've seen.
Yeah. We talked about those cookie cutter venues of the 70s and the 80s, right? Multi-purpose. In the baseball world, it seems like, correct me if I'm wrong, but Camden Yards was a game changer, right? That was a game changer, especially obviously around baseball stadiums. I would say selfishly, because I was part of it, Staples Center and LA Live was a catalyst for that
live entertainment,
Jonathan, as you talked about, that development around it. From an NFL perspective, is there one out there or are we about to see it? I mean, my point is, what is that next? Where are we going with the NFL stadium experience? Because that's a little different than those other venues I mentioned.
Yeah. Well, in Tottenham, so the NFL playing in London, you know, we have development that's happening around the stadium. It also had to knit itself into a district with, you know, single, double-story buildings. And there was landmarks that had to be, you know, dealt with. And so some of those landmark buildings were turned into the entrance to the retail store that's then connected to the stadium. And so that's probably one of the current examples. Cool. Also, if we go to Hong Kong, right? Mm-hmm. So Kai Tak in Hong Kong is an enormous project, 55,000 capacity stadium. But what happens around the stadium is millions of square feet of development, urban park, different training fields, different venues, residential, live workspaces, all of that in a site that you can't even find in the US anymore. The size of this was an old airfield just off the bay. And that's the density that we're kind of hoping for, right, to find, because that's what really activates these districts.
Right, right. No, that's interesting that we really look U.S.-based, but the last two, more of the whole soccer culture in Europe and bringing some of those ideas back here to the States. Mm-hmm. So an interesting kind of reverse roles there.
Well, that's something that we, you know, really look at as a firm is the global thinking, but at the local level. Right. And how do you take some of these ideas that we experience around the world and then bring it here, or some of the ideas in the US and bring it there? I think that, you know, some international firms are a little more siloed, and we try not to be that way. We try to really open up the think tank and collaborate with everybody to get the best ideas to rise to the top.
Is there less differentiation nowadays when you look at design of, let's say, a facility being built in Australia versus Europe versus the Americas than there would have been 10 years ago?
I think there's still some, I would say, cultural differences between them. The U.S. venues tend to have more hospitality inside of them. I don't know if you agree with that. More premium hospitality. The level of finish seems to be a little bit higher. And again, they're doing the surveys inside of the market to see what do people want. And then part of that is not only what they want, it's like, what's that next level of experience that you haven't seen yet? Tottenham was probably one of the first. I mean, big difference when we designed Arsenal, Emirates Stadium 15 years ago, and then Tottenham that opened about 6 years ago. Big difference between those two buildings and the level of finish. But a lot of that had to do with Daniel Levy and his vision for that building. And from the start, wanted to make it a venue that Roger and the NFL owners would want to come and use. He wanted that from the beginning. We were a part of those very early meetings with the NFL and incorporating all the operational requirements that an NFL stadium has to have into an English Premier League stadium. And that happened seamlessly within our firm from the very beginning. And you go over to Australia, other parts of the world, and they might be a little more Spartan. There'll be areas of hospitality, maybe not quite the same level of finish, unless that's kind of a directive from that owner. But in terms of sightline strategies and experiential, and they also are integrated. There's so many more urban integrations that you'll find outside of the U.S., especially in the bigger stadiums that you mentioned in NFL in particular, because they are more urban. They do have transit nearby. They do have these podium levels where we insert restaurants and retail and all these activities where even if you're not going into the building every day, there is so much activity happening right at its base. And it's such an iconic anchor to the rest of the things that happen. That is something that more and more people want to see if they can achieve that for their community, for their city, to just activate these spaces inside and outside of games.
Yeah, no, that's great. And I want to take a dive deeper into what's happening here in the States as well as in the region. We're going to take a quick break here on Skin in the Game and be back with our guest, Jonathan and Scott from Populous. Stay tuned.
I'm excited to see, like, she said this, well, he said that.
The truth will come out.
Wondering what the buzz is? What's the hot goss? Whatever it is, we're talking about it on Group Chat, your weekly connection to the unpredictable, weird, and wonderful world of pop culture, from film, music, theater to food, blockbusters, and beyond. Every week with Tiffany Bentley and her revolving panel of pop culture enthusiasts. Listen to Group Chat on Fridays at 10 a.m. and Saturdays at noon on BTPM NPR.
I'm very excited.
Welcome back to Skin in the Game. We are thrilled to have the leadership of Populous in studio here today. And guys, I wanted to talk a little bit, and Jonathan, you alluded to it, how you really tried to take local influences into the design and the development of a stadium, right? And a stadium in LA may be different than a stadium in Buffalo.
Just a little bit.
Or Cleveland or Pittsburgh. So if you could just give us a little input on the kind of the prioritization of making sure that local and local culture is in the facility.
Yeah, I think that's a multi kind of faceted answer, right? You know, on the one hand, we're not the type of design firm that sketches on a piece of paper and says, this should be your building. And it's not a stylistic approach. But well before we even get to anything like that about design, we try to solve what the building should be for the team, for the owner, for the community, for the city into which it resides, right? So that becomes highly specific. And that's why none of our buildings look the same. There are plenty of design firms out there. Oh, that's a this firm, that's a that firm. You can see it. We've never gone in that direction. So that's part of that, taking that global thinking, local level, localize the thinking. What's the market? You know, what? How do the ownership groups think of the market? What are they? What's going to be best for their fan base? And then we start researching the fan base and work with other partners out there, consultants, to inform that kind of thinking. And you wind up coming up with a very bespoke solution. You know, we try to have visioning sessions with our ownership group, and we did this in Buffalo. And I think that's part of creating the partnership with our clients. So if you do that and you get that part right, and then you build in the business case, you work on the ROI, you understand what's going to sell in a particular location, you wind up with a very bespoke solution. You know, we can also get into very specific climate conditions here in Buffalo. How did we design for that? How did the exterior design of the building, you know, kind of respond to the wind? We can drill into that if we'd like. It really becomes, it's not an LA stadium, period. It doesn't want to be. The Bills want to be outside. I mean, I love all the conversations out there about roof or no roof. It's like, this is the Buffalo Bills. They just came out with the cold front jerseys. It's like the coolest thing ever. I mean, you see that. It's like, own it. And that's what they're doing. They're playing outside football and everybody should just get on board.
Yeah, I think the, you know, here in Buffalo, and I'll take some responsibility for this. I think the roof versus no roof, not partial roof, but roof versus no roof, dome or no dome conversation was more driven by the media than it was by internal conversation. Right. I know that was settled quite some time ago, and those of us in the media might have, in hindsight, played a role in keeping that conversation going longer than it needed to. I do want to ask you, though, speaking of a story I wrote and really enjoyed writing about these visioning sessions, and let's use the Buffalo Bills, Pegula family visioning session as an example of these. Who's in the room and what happens in that room?
Yeah, I'll tell you what. I don't know what you think. It was really one of the
probably the best,
most extraordinary sessions. A lot of times, I mean, our clients are very successful, busy people, and sometimes it's hard to get a whole day. And Kim and Terry were going to give us an entire day. So we flew down to Boca. They had their whole family was there. They had their top executives from the team there, and they gave us an entire day. And we had questions prepared in order to extract information from them. And it was interesting in the difference, the way that they answered questions, right? So we'd ask a question, and Kim would answer the question with an answer, and Terry would answer the question with a story, right? But it was every time, right? And the story took you to a place where it was like, oh, I get it, right? So they came at it from two different angles, but it allowed us to really understand, you know, kind of how they love this team and this community, what they wanted to provide in the building. And we took that literally in some cases and sometimes figuratively in order to create those core design principles that are the foundation of everything we do in the building. And we come back to them all the time through the design process. And it allowed us to gather some of the inspirational ideas that kind of formulated ways we approach the design. Right?
Yeah. I mean, when that goes right, it just, you get so excited about it. Like there's a passion that kicks in for us as designers when you have somebody that's that passionate on the other side of the table. It's just that simple, right? I mean, the care for the community and the fan base, all of their responses were about servicing the fans, right? And that's just, that fuels the whole team, right? So, you know, and it's a long journey, right? But if I know on opening day of this stadium, we'll be standing out there with all of our Populous team and everybody else, and we'll be thinking back to that day because it was the foundation of the project. Not every project runs that way. Not every ownership group goes to those extents. We have to try to convince them to, but sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't.
Yeah, that's great input. And I spent some years in sports and running an advertising agency. And what you're talking about is getting that creative brief, right? Because that takes a lot of the subjectivity out of it. And when you're judging the creative, whether it's an ad or a building, you go back to those core principles that you had everybody agreed on.
Right.
Now, the client's welcome to change the goalpost.
Yeah.
Right. But
and often they do.
Often they do.
But they need to realize, okay, we're changing the objectives, which is, again, is fine, but let's all be singing off the same same missile, right?
Yeah.
And they both reinforced, we're going to play outside. In Buffalo, we play outside. Terry mentioned that we love that when the schedule comes out each year and owners look to see who has to go play in Buffalo in December or January, and they tell him that they hate coming up there, and he goes, I'm already in their head, right? So that's like, that's good. Right. And we you know, the things about the intimacy that they were looking for, but they still wanted it to be intimidating. And we knew, you know, from having the ability to play football in this city, what it's like in December. And so we knew we wanted to keep fans warmer and we wanted to keep them drier. And we knew that the canopy would do that in different ways. And we're already thinking about how do we take the experiential element for fans and then help to sponsor it and monetize it. Like that's happening in the background. We'll do that too. But we learned those things about their vision that we were able to now articulate that in a series of principles, which then transition themselves into how do you manifest that into a physical building. Yeah.
From day one, we've been saying intimacy and intimidation. Mm-hmm. Scott just hit on it before. Mm-hmm. And then a couple years later now to see Hard Knocks and Josh Allen walking out on the field and like, oh my God, he literally said there's a wall here, right? Mm-hmm. That's that intimidation. And it's just like, we're only starting to see the glimpse of it. So it's going to be so incredible.
I thought of that too, because I was in your office, Jonathan, 2 years ago.
We talked about it then, right?
Yeah, and I saw sketches on the wall and we talked about it. I mean, there are certain words, tall, intimidating. The phrase, where else would you rather be than right here, right now? Which of course goes back to Marv Levy. Scott, when you played for him in the 80s and has been with Marv long before he got to Buffalo. I know that came up in that visioning room that day. It's like this mix of history and feeling and what that building should be. And I was wondering if somebody handed Josh a card to just script that out. And I know they didn't.
Yeah.
Like, man, Josh, you were right on the talking points there.
Yeah, but just looking
shows
at it,
you did it,
and,
right?
Right. And not that we had any, you know, the fact that we had something to do with it aside, watching it on Hard Knocks, it looks like a wall, you know, the seating bowl. It's just, it's going to be incredible.
Yeah, Jack, have you been in the stadium?
I have not.
We got to hook you up with a visit because, again, when we were just out there, we went from the roof to the field. And I can tell you, the roof looking down, the words that went through my head, I cannot say aloud right now. But I can tell you that that building is tall and it is, that partial canopy really does cover a lot of the seats, for sure. And it's very apparent when you're up there. And then when you're at the field looking up and around, it does feel like a fortress.
It's like the Roman Colosseum.
And I can imagine how loud it's going to be.
Yeah, it's going to be incredibly loud, especially with the materials of the building, right? So the roof with the metal decking and the structural steel, it's going to be reverberating sound. I mean, it's loud in Orchard Park at current Highmark Stadium, and that's an open, wide bowl. Those fans in the new building, watch out, NFL. Yeah.
It was one of the foundational elements. The other thing, too, is we learned a lot about Terry and Kim and the other folks on the team, their understanding of the history of Buffalo and the buildings that they thought were transformative or beautiful pieces of architecture and why. And it was from that we brought around the colonnade and some of the other influences that informed us, again, what this building might want to be.
Yeah. If you look at some of those Stoic buildings from, you know, 1939 in Buffalo, and the Odd being one of them, and the big rectangular cut voids that are taken out of the facade, those are imprinted in a way in the facade of the new stadium. But it's done in a very modern, forward-looking way. And so that's like, how can we kind of have reverence for the past and then propel the team, the city, everything into the future?
Yeah.
And so you have some of those kind of Stoic moments. There's a kind of austerity to all of the elements on the facade. There's also a gentle roll to the roof line, and then the way that the mantle panels end on a nice arc that goes all the way around the building. So those are the things that make it a little bit more forward facing and not, you know, getting too stuck in the past.
Yeah,
it's a balance.
Yeah, on that note, you know, the next building, people try to copy what was from the last building, right? Or looking at how do we take this to the next level. Are there any trademark ideas that are really unique to this building in Buffalo that, you know, are A, truly Buffalo, or B, you might say, hey, this is going to be something other buildings may want to emulate?
We both have our list of things. This Seating Bowl is incredibly unique. There isn't another NFL stadium like this Seating Bowl, not in America. The seats throughout all of the levels are closer. And that was part of the design. Part of it was to create that intimacy. We stacked more. Part of it was because of the weather, keeping people drier. And so, but a lot of that, the cantilevered north area is one of the steepest areas in any NFL building. The GA Plus Concourse. So there's a concourse on the north side that sits below the main concourse. It's only 12 feet off the field. There is no other stadium in the NFL that has a concourse that's that close, where people can be that close to the field and see the field. I feel like a lot of the Seating Bowl, there's a lot of Seating Bowl details that have been done in a way to focus everybody's view on the game, the game, the game, the game. It wasn't designed for anything else but to watch football. And they can do other things in it. It just wasn't designed for those other things. And it'll be fine. It'll be great. But coming to a stadium to watch a football game, and again, that came out of the visioning session. That
absolutely.
Yeah.
A couple other small details, but kind of really cool ones. When you see the camera during a game for a field goal or an extra point, you're going to see the goalposts. Beyond the goalposts is the Legends deck. And right on top of the Legends deck is a Charge logo, and it's backlit by LED. That's going to be a hallmark for the stadium. It's going to be on camera all the time. Super cool, like, oh, it's Bills. It's Buffalo, right? Further, running with the Charge logo, we use that to create the perforation pattern in the entire exterior design of the stadium. So not to get too scientific and go down a rabbit hole, which I could easily do, the skin of the building is perforated. It allows wind to pass through it, and it's sort of a baffle. And in doing that, it lessens the wind pressures of the wind coming down into the building. It's all through this mass customized perforated system, which is done with the Charge logo. And to me, you can't do that in LA.
That's pretty cool. Cool.
I do want you, Jonathan, to nerd out just a little bit more on what the heck you're doing with the wind. The cantilevered roof, do I have the right terminology there? The roof has something to do with that. That perforated skin has something to do with it. But I mean, to cut it to the end here, my understanding is fans are going to be a lot warmer in that stadium than in the current one.
Yeah.
And kickers and punters and, well, quarterbacks too might be a lot happier in that new stadium versus the current one.
Yeah. It's probably not too hard to outpace the current stadium. I mean, it is as open can be. So as Scott mentioned, you know, the seating bowl is number one. You're creating these decks, you're creating protection. The canopy is number two. The facade is number three. All of these things were designed by studying with, you know, fluid dynamic modeling, all of the wind patterns and the prevailing winds and which direction it was coming from and how fast and what times of day and season, et cetera. And all of the shaping of the building, as well as that perforated skin, are designed to work with it in a way that mitigates any kind of wind penetration to the players on the field. Sounds simple. It's not. It took a long time to figure it out with a lot of really smart engineers, but that was the theory. And, you know, you work with your consultants and your engineers and you sit down and say, this is the objective. How are we going to solve for it? Right. Without, you know, building a massive, you know, dome that wasn't really called for this project. Mm-hmm. Right. And so that's exciting when you get to do something so highly customized for a particular location.
If you're one of those fans that have been coming to Bills games for 50 years or longer, and you're tired of getting snowed on and you're tired of getting rained on, there are places in that building you're never going to get wet. But if you want that authentic experience like you've had for 40 or 50 years and you want to be in the lower bowl and you want to be close to the action and you don't care if it's snowing or if it's raining, then buy that lower bowl seat, because you can have either experience in this new building. And we're going to be able to, it's not an indoor building, right? So it's not like people are going to be hot and take their coats off in December, but we do have radiant heaters around all of the destination bars and the concourses, even in some of the standing areas along the inner perimeter of the open concourses. So there's going to be places where there are some radiant heaters and people will be able, they're going to feel a lot of relief from bitter cold when they're in that building. Sure, it's going to be, I can't wait. I can't wait for the people of Buffalo to be able to enjoy that building.
Well, and it's great that there's some truly innovative, you know, design coming out of this that'll be unique to Buffalo. I wanted to venture a little bit beyond the boundaries of Western New York. And so our listeners know, I mean, you guys have been involved with Climate Pledge Arena in Seattle, which is huge, huge kudos on that. UBS in Long Island, Belmont, the home of the Islanders. But the one I wanted to touch on, and I know you guys have been recognized for the work there, is in Atlanta around the Battery and what's happening with the Braves. That seems to be where a lot of people are pointing on a project that worked on a lot of fronts, right? So if you could just kind of give our listeners a little bit of background on what you've done in Atlanta and how that's kind of changing what buildings might be looking at in the future.
So everything that's in the Battery is certainly being looked at right now, as you just pointed out, you know, from a venue anchored mixed use district standpoint. Now, we did the ballpark. We did everything about the ballpark. We worked on the preliminary conceptual master plan for what that development later became. And there was a lot of other, you know, firms that were involved on all that. You know, if we just look at it for what it is today, it's become a kind of beacon for what these projects could be. You know, the type of development that it is very specific to Atlanta. What works there might not work somewhere else, and every location's different. But it all comes back to creating that synergy around a venue. And that's something that back then with Truist Park, we absolutely believed in, wanted to help, you know, conceive of it. But again, other firms kind of took that forward. You know, we're looking at it and trying to leverage that model in all of the other locations that we're working on today.
We've got to jump to a break in just a minute. So I'm going to ask you both a quick question here. Okay. It's one I want to slip in. You can use Atlanta, Buffalo, whatever your inspiration would be for this. I've got to think when you're working on a design, there's something that is personally important to you. Scott, I'm going to guess maybe you're thinking of the athletes. Maybe not just that, but I've got to think you're going back to that.
Maybe.
For each of you, what is something close to you and you make sure you get that really right or do something new with that?
Well, it's interesting. We told Kim and Terry that we would have our top five things that were unique or first in the NFL. And the GA Plus Concourse was one of those things. And so are the north end zone field areas where GA fans can go and stand on a field. It'll be the only building in the NFL where a GA fan can stand on a field. The 9 foot tall LED board in our north end zone. Nobody has done that yet. And of course, the largest snow melt system in a stadium anywhere in the world. That's another super cool thing. But the thing that's nearest to my heart is that warm up room that we walked into that's part of the home team locker room complex. Having played games here when it's snowed and rained and it was bitterly cold, And perhaps you weren't always maybe as prepared physically. Like you didn't do the perfect warm-up before that game. This area that's off of the locker room will now allow that. It's 45 yards long. It's 35 feet tall. It'll have an artificial turf surface. Punters can punt in there. Kickers can kick in there. Quarterbacks can throw in there. Guys can roll out. They can do plyos regardless of the weather, regardless of what time they pull the tarp off the field because of the weather condition, that they'll be able to warm up, cool down, do whatever they need to do in a way that it's totally them. They have the full supervision through all the glass of the training staff and the sport performance people. And I just say, if you're a free agent, I think you should be looking to come to Buffalo in 2026 or after, because nobody else has that anywhere in the NFL.
It'll be a highlight of the free agent tour. Jonathan, you're going to get a break to think about your answer. Everybody stay with us. We'll be back shortly with Scott Radisic and Jonathan Maley from Populous here on Skin in the Game.
Corey here with the Compact Civics Expansion Pack.
America is such a big, wide, awesome place, and to be able to see things that are representative of so many different places, it can be so important when brought to your tiny town.
Everybody is so kind and loving. I'm here in Buffalo just because of Stage Buffalo.
From urban farms to rural fairs, we'll celebrate spaces that bring us together and create community.
Watch on the Buffalo Toronto Public Media YouTube channel.
From your morning commute to quiet evenings at home, Buffalo Toronto Public Media is always there with trusted news, inspiring stories, and timeless music. It's your connection to a world of wonder. This is Public Media.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Skin in the Game. We are back with Scott Radisic and Jonathan Maley from Populous. All right, Jonathan, you've had a break to think about the toughest question you're going to be asked today. What is something important to you, close to your heart, close to your creative heart, when you are designing a venue?
Yeah, I didn't need the break to come up with the answer.
I had a feeling maybe
right,
you did.
Right into my head right away. And we started talking about it a little bit before using the Buffalo example, but it really kind of permeates into all of the different projects. When we get the design story right and it connects with our clients and what they want and what their interests are for a particular venue and the location, and then we get to develop an architecture and a design, not just the exterior, but the interior, the overall experience, how people see the building, it's easy to talk about, right? Because it's just such a bespoke thing. You can't really challenge it. It's like this connectivity with the client group, like, no, that's your design. And you can then get behind it. And then, you know, we produce the renderings and, you know, some of our clients might think it's easy to produce these renderings and they just come out of, you know, thin air. That's not a Buffalo commentary. That's some other projects, but they're not easy and you want to get them right. The other part that I really love is the communication amongst the project team when it's going right. As we talked about before, these are super complex projects. There's challenges. There's all kinds of hurdles. And Scott and, you know, everybody at Populous hear me preach about this all the time. Communication, communication, communication. And when you do that right, and you communicate with your ownership group and the project team right, God, it makes things go a lot easier. It's a little more challenging these days with everybody, you know, younger folks really on their phones, you know, pick up the phone, call somebody, right? Scott and I are definitely phone people, right? Connect with people and don't lose that. That's something that's incredibly important to us as we move into the future.
And I think sports are important. And you know, this whole program was built upon the fact, whether you're a fan or you're not a fan, whether you go to a game or not go to a game, you're all part of it. You all have skin in the game. And sports to me is the great uniter. Sports is whether you're a farmer or whether you're a CEO of a bank, you can be in a building or in a bar and do a high five because you share something. Now, you know, I am concerned, and not specifically with this building, but sports in general, we're now starting to segregate fans by paywalls with streaming, right? Or VIP sections and club sections. And I guess I look to you guys, is what role can sports architecture play in making sure that buildings like this in Buffalo or Atlanta or Seattle can be still that common communal place to gather?
We definitely take our cues from cultural aspects of the city. Think about, you come over my house, we're going to hang out in the kitchen, right? The suites here were designed in a way that support that. But there's so many experiences that for the last 50 plus years, Bills fans haven't had in their stadium. And it was important for us to do some things in the new building that supported all of that. The open concourses were a way to always keep them connected to the view of the field. The destination bars, they got lots of destinations to go. So if you're sitting in a GA seat, lower bowl, upper bowl, wherever, you have these destinations to be communal with people if you don't want to sit in your seat for a while. And they'll be heated and they'll have upscale food and beverages. Everybody walks into a market where the food's being prepared right in that place in front of your eyes, and you grab it and you'll get it faster. It'll taste better. And like, so all those things are being done to benefit the everyday fan who just loves to come to Bills games. And hopefully there'll be more communal activities in that space with them. And the same thing with the way that we did the clubs on the other side, on the east side, right? They're stacked. They have the same entry. You can go up and down between the two. So everything about this building, whether you're a premium customer or not a premium customer, is about how you love Bills football and how you can be communal and celebrate it with other people who are doing it at the same time. And that was foundational as well.
Yeah. I mean, whether it's Buffalo or any of these projects, right? What it comes down to, especially today with all of the fan base, whether it's your super VIP or your GA, you know, hard and true fan, there's a basically an ecosystem of products and offerings that have to come together and work for everybody. If it doesn't work for the highest and the lowest, it's not going to work.
Right.
And so, you know, we used to see, you know, decades ago, there could be like three offerings. Now there could be 14 or 15. And all of that is about striating the market, creating something for everybody. And, you know, frankly, it's a bit of an arms race, right, between all of these teams and cities. And if you're an owner who really understands your base fan, you make sure that you're generating enough revenue over here to give the base fan the best experience that they can have, too. So it all has to work together.
Yeah, yeah. Well, one of the trends I've been seeing, and you guys are probably a big part of this, too, in the last probably 3 to 4 years, are converting these very segregated suite areas into now communal gathering spaces, more of a standing room only environment, which, and Tim, when I visited Progressive Field, I was just blown away by the fact that what was 8 or 9 suites are now these areas for standing room only, and they're bringing in a whole different demographic. And they're there to socialize. Scott, to your point, they're there as much for the communal experience as they are to watch the game.
You know, the days of like countless numbers of suites is kind of over.
Yeah.
Right. So do you aggregate a few of them, make a special club? Do you create a whole different offering in this, in a different area where people, they are social gathering? I mean, younger generations, you know, they want to kind of roam around the stadium. They want to go check out different things. And there's, you know, you can get into certain types of passes that you could have access to multiple experiences.
People are always asking us that. So what's next?
Yeah.
What's next? And it's like, well, you just asked me last year. Right? So now you asked me again this year. But what's really great is if you go back through, you know, decades of our firm history and the things we've done 12, 13 years ago, we created work directly with the NFL. We called it the NFL Idea Book at the league office and just talked about buildings that had these current conditions and what can we do inside of them, outside of them. And we created this portfolio of ideas that was then for the league to say, you know, if you want to share it with the rest of your teams. And over time, what do we see? We start seeing all these ideas getting implemented into buildings in different ways. And we know that we created that idea. And we'll say, well, we may not have been the architect working with that owner, but that was our idea that we shared with the NFL. And they always want to know that, right? And more of the what's next is around, right, how does it connect to its community, right? How is it a catalyst for development? Like these bigger attributes that we're not giving you a design solution. We're talking about, in order to be successful or be an amazing global stadium, what does it do? And some of them then come into the building where we say, how do we create intimacy, right? And intimidation. How do we make sure that it contains spectacle? At the moment when you need it to contain spectacle, how does this building do that? Or even those magic moments when it like transcends sport, right? Do you remember that moment in that building when so-and-so? And so we understand that we're trying to allow our buildings to do all those things And future buildings, we want to make sure that they do all those things too. Well, I don't know if people 20 or 30 years ago were thinking about that, right?
Cathedrals for memories. Yeah. That's what they are.
We've only got a few minutes left. I want to be sure to ask you guys about something that I'm sure was big news for Populous, and I think it's big news in the sports landscape in Canada. Hmm. You've opened an office in Toronto. So, Jonathan, you're director of the Americas. I'm looking at you on this one. tell us what's going on in Canada.
We have been working in Canada for a while, and everything from, you know, working on the renovations to the Olympic Stadium in Montreal to recently opening award-winning BMO Center in Calgary. Our work in the Rogers Center, and you know, it's been widely publicized, as well as our Toronto performance venue and hotel project, which is about to kick off into the next phase. So Canada's not new to us, you know, but we have a number of employees that have been kind of across the region, and we really like working there. You know, we've met with some great clients, and you realize, you know, you go where the people are that you can start to build around. We have somebody in Montreal. We have somebody in Toronto. We have a few people in Winnipeg, Calgary as well. It's been exceptional to work there. So it's sort of, why not?
What are the growth opportunities in Canada? I mean, we see so much sports happening in Toronto, you know, Montreal, and the big hockey cities, I guess I can simplify this. And not that we're even limiting ourselves to sports here, but so much culture, so much
convention
entertainment.
Convention centers. Yeah, absolutely. No, I think we see a lot of multiple sport training centers, places where rec centers, community facilities. I mean, community facilities are a big part of what we do as well. And, you know, creating these, you know, amazing, you know, gyms and places for kids in local communities to come to is important to us as well. So it's really kind of across all sports. It's also convention center. BMO Center in Calgary is a convention center.
I've had the ability to work with the Rough Riders. We designed their new training center, the Alouettes, right, to renovate work at McGill University, early concept work in Winnipeg for the Blue Bombers. You know, so there's certain things that kind of translate. It doesn't matter where you are, but it is important to just understand the cultural nuances that make it that much more successful when you're done.
Wow. With all that going on,
how do we sleep?
No, I'm thrilled that you could share an hour with us here today on Skin in the Game.
And we might have to just have you back.
Yeah, in all seriousness, guys, thank you for joining us. Thank you for creating these unique communal experiences in communities across the globe. I can speak for myself and probably Tim. Can't wait to see you out front of the building in 2026, shaking hands with the fans as they walk in. So, thanks for joining us on Skin in the Game. And to our listeners, thanks for tuning in. And stay tuned for future episodes coming down the road.
Thanks for having us.
You bet.
This is a production of Buffalo Toronto Public Media. Thanks for listening.